Hey, everybody, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar where we're going to be talking about how to identify people who are going to become great collectors. Identifying individuals who will become great collectors is a question as old as the industry itself. Like people who predicted that the iPhone wouldn't dethrone the BlackBerry because it didn't have a keyboard, and those who still think that pineapple belongs on pizza. Predicting success isn't always straightforward. Some people are simply born to be collectors. They're resilient, empathetic, and quick thinkers. But how do you spot them before they've had a chance to prove themselves? Today, in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here who are going to reveal the secrets to spotting and nurturing top-performing collectors. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source is a training platform that helps companies address the biggest challenge in learning and knowledge retention globally. It's called the forgetting curve. If you haven't heard of the forgetting curve, or the joke here is if you've forgotten it, you've no doubt seen the results in your organization. The forgetting curve describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that is new hire or other types of training. And all your people experience this, whether they are new or seasoned team members. The results are mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, rework, and higher turnover. This leads to increased regulatory, financial, contractual, and reputational risk. Knowledge Source turns the forgetting curve into deep learning, enabling your team to rapidly acquire the crucial skills and knowledge and, more importantly, help them retain it. Knowledge Source will help make your job easier and empower your people with the knowledge they need to thrive. You can learn more by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com. I just dropped a link in the chat that you can use to visit their website, and we're going to hear from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Candace Allen has worked in collections for 9 years, all of them at Williams & Fudge, and has been a team leader there for 2 years now. She's certified as a professional collection specialist and is responsible for training and developing the collection staff and helping bridge the gap between understanding laws and meeting client expectations. Prior to joining Arm Compliance Business Solutions, Irene Hoheisel was the Vice President of Collections and Education for 27 years at ARSI, which included serving as a compliance resource, leading all staff training, 22 years of creating and presenting educational seminars for clients and industry-related organizations. She ran the collection department for multiple locations and helped grow the company's success. She was named one of the 20 most powerful women in collections by Collection Advisor Magazine. She's presented educational seminars since 2004 and became an ACA International Certified Instructor in 2013. She has many awards, including the Charles F. Lindemann Certified Instructor of the Year, helping members succeed, and was 3 times awarded the Fred Kirshner Instructor Achievement Award. She's also recognized by the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. Ken Peck is the Chief Compliance Officer with Lockhart, Morris & Montgomery. He's a seasoned veteran with more than 26 years of expertise in the ARM industry. He has a wealth of knowledge and experience in managing, in the ARM industry with a wealth of experience in managing business process outsourcing, first and third party collections. He brings invaluable insights to the table. Ken's leadership extends beyond the boardroom as evidenced by his tenure on the ACA International Board for Texas. However, his true pride lies in nurturing talent, shaping individuals into not just professionals, but future leaders. Furthermore, Ken excels in creating innovative strategies and processes that drive success and growth in the industry. Calder Willingham is the CEO of Creditors Bureau Associates, located in Macon, Georgia. CBA is a family-owned business that Calder helped grow from a small local business to one that now has national market share in the revenue cycle management industry. Calder also owns 2 other companies and is continuing to leverage CBA's core values of compliance first, work smart, and serve others to further advance his company's growth in healthcare collections and beyond. Everybody who's watching us live today is absolutely invited to ask questions and submit comments during the course of our conversation. You can use the chat or the Q&A to submit your questions and comments. If you prefer to participate anonymously, click on the anonymous button in the Q&A, and anything that we receive from you is received anonymously. Okay, let's jump into our conversation. So let's talk a little bit first. This is an industry that is increasingly digital focused and more regulated. So I'm curious what you think the specific traits are that identify or identify with the most predictive in terms of success for high performing collectors, and maybe talk a little bit about how organizations can more effectively screen for these qualities during the recruitment process. Ken, you logged on first today, so I know that means you're the most anxious, so I'm going to let you kick us off.
Of course, you know me. Wow. Yeah, okay. Hey, no, I appreciate this. This is something that, you know, I enjoy really talking about. You know, as the great Brian Valentine would say, you got to have a high energy, baby. Like when you're looking for somebody, they got to have that energy to be able to deal with the rigors of what it is we do. They have to be good at communicating and, you know, and have that goal-oriented type of sense of urgency. And they man, one of an important element, they have to be willing to adapt to change, which is always constant in our industry. And how we can, you know, prepare or look for that in new people is just having, like, you know, scenario-based questions that go along with what we deal with on a daily basis. How would they answer? You know, how do they go through a challenging conversation? How can they de-escalate a conversation? And also deploy, you know, personality assessment tests like the Myers-Briggs test to kind of identify what type of person are you getting. And the biggest thing is role playing. That's one of the things I enjoy doing, is having real role playing with the candidates and even the ones that you have here. So, hey, how do they de-escalate, as I said earlier? How do they negotiate for payment? Those little things to me are just kind of the things that I would focus on.
I agree with you, Ken. I will say, though, one thing that nowadays we have to look for, which wasn't such a big deal before, but collectors have to be somewhat computer literate. I remember in the past, I'd hire people that, and I found out later on that I didn't give them a typing test. They said they could type, but they couldn't. And I remember Mavis Deacon teaches typing. I bought the program and had them start learning how to type. Not a good idea. So they have to be somewhat computer literate, at least to a certain degree. They have to have speed. I mean, they have to now maneuver from the software, vendor sites, skip trace sites, payment portals, dialer calls, websites. I mean, they have to go to so many different things during a normal call sometimes that if they don't have that ability to stop being afraid of computers, which some still do, it's crucial to them not only getting to enough accounts, but developing the speed they need to be a quality collector. I really agree with tests. I'm a test person, but that doesn't mean a test has to be overbearing. A test could actually be fun. It could be a couple of seconds long. They don't have to be crazy. You're not hiring an IT person. You're hiring a collector. So think of things like what you're looking for in a test. Can they type? Can they maneuver through screens? Do they understand how to click and point? And I mean, it could be that level all the way up to something more serious. And there's free sites on the internet for this that you could test. And this is one thing I recommend. When you find a couple of sites that you like, test them on your current staff. Have them do it. And then watch. How do they respond when they're one of your top collectors? How are their scores when they're one of your lower collectors? You might find trends to see, well, every top collector scored well with this test. Every low collector scored poorly with that same test. Well, now employ that test when you're doing an interview. And see what they do. See, are they on the top end or on the low end? And you might be able to get a little insight. Because let's face it, people become professional interviewers. There are times I've hired people and I sat in the training with them thinking, what was I thinking? Why did I hire this person? I've even gone back to my notes from the interview and looking like, no, they lied. This is not what they think. This is not what they do. So incorporating things in your interview is really important, but you got to find the right things. If you're just going to give them a typing test, yes, it does tell you if they could type and the speed, but it really doesn't tell you anything else about that person except their fingers move on a typewriter, okay? That's not great. So look for things like develop tests yourself are always great, but there's a lot of software out there. There's a lot of vendors out there that have some tests for you, but I like to develop on my own because I want them to do what I do. And not every vendor does what I do. So things like looking for stuff like, can they think on their feet? Looking at past things, what's their attendance history? Do they want this job or are they just looking for a paycheck? until they find something else. That's never good. We don't like those employees because then you invest so much into them and they're gone anyway, even if they could have done this. Are they very forgetful? There are memory tests, and I found that on memory tests, if they scored higher, they were a better collector because they were able to remember conversations and think back on conversations with the consumer and be able to recall what the consumer said in the beginning of the conversation to apply now. Do they like people? Ask some personal questions as far as like, what's the favorite accomplishment you've ever had? What are you the most proud of? And see what they come up with. A lot of people come up with things they've done with other people or for other people. Are they short-tempered? Ask them how they've handled bad situations in the past or give them a situation and ask how they think they might handle that. And see if they're a type of person that I'm just going to stick with this until it burns, or, you know, I'm going to have to get some help with that and call somebody in. It makes a big difference to see what they have. But the one thing that I love to do the most was we called it a mock collection call. And if you ever heard me speak before, I've probably said this. But we would have a collector, the same collector, call in at a certain time during the, like, 3 minutes into the interview, and we'd stop whatever we were discussing, and we'd hand them the phone and say, this is for you. It's one of our collectors. We want you to be a collector. They're going to be a consumer, and we know you don't know our policies and procedures. We just want you to wing it. That was all we would tell them, and then we would see what their reaction was. But the true thing to find out what this person was about wasn't so much how they said things, because they don't know our policies and procedures. They may have never been in collections or done collections before, so they would have no idea what to say. It was, how did they handle me handing them a phone, and what did they start to say in the beginning? I've had people that would hand you back the phone and say no. Well, that's not going to be a collector. I've had people that have got on the phone and started talking and said, well, let me get you somebody that could help you. And I would say to them, that would be you. Like, you're the person that helps them. But I've had others that started fake typing. Well, let me look and see if I could find you. And there would be fake typing on the desk in front of them. Like, you could see they were getting into it. I had some that would make up stuff that might have been a little too harsh, thinking, well, they might really have a bad feeling about collection agencies, and this is what they expect I want them to say. So there were things that you learn just from how they handle the call. Forget about what they say, but how they handle the call that was outside the box. So it wasn't something they learned from practicing, what do I say when I interview? So it kind of threw them for a loop a little bit, and I got to see the real person. So things like that. If they got angry, I could see if they're short-tempered. But there are so many tools out there you could use that you can create yourself, or if you don't want to or you don't feel good at it, meet with vendors and find out what they have, and they're usually a low cost, or just have somebody scan the internet and look for certain types of free tools that you could use to test people, and man, you'll find somebody much faster. Still may not be perfect, but you'll find somebody much faster to eliminate. I may not always tell you if they're going to be great, but you'll know who to eliminate. And anybody else agree with stuff like that?
So I totally agree. I'm sorry to call it, but no, I agree.
Yeah, I those are great points. What I would, in what you're talking about, are you need to put in place filters. We need to have filters in place in our hiring process, and we hire off Indeed. And so what we do initially is put out 6 or 7 questions through the Indeed Messenger. Depending upon their responses to those, then we send another message that says, hey, please email us back at such and such address. And it is a Word document with 7 more questions. And that in itself is a test. How are they going to respond? Are they going to copy and paste everything in that Word document and their answers into the email? Are they going to type out their responses on the Word document and then attach that Word document to the email? Or, you know, sometimes they just send the answers to the questions and that's it. But that in itself can kind of tell you how, you know, literate they are with a computer. And that's free. And so that's just one of the small ways you can go. Of course, a typing test to me is a great way to see really how much someone uses a computer. If they're typing 20 words a minute, then they can, you know, type out some comments into the collection notes. But if someone's doing 45, 50 words a minute, like, they are probably can multitask, multiple screens, multiple tabs open, and they are going to probably be a high capacity type, collector. Now, can they be effective? You know, that's a conversation for another. That's the conversation where the mock call comes in that Irene is talking about. And I would urge anyone that's listening today, if you're not doing a mock call with your potential candidate, start today. That's going to tell you so much. Like, what it's going to tell you is, are these people confident? Like, if some stranger comes into your office, they're interviewing, they're probably uncomfortable. And if you're the person that is pretending to be the consumer, this person's being the collector, and they can confidently, maybe they get stuff wrong, but they can think on their feet and answer the questions that are not intimidated, shy, that's a good sign. And so you need to have multiple filters in place, whether it is, do they answer the questions well? Are they answering it the way you want it? Can you understand their answers? How are they answering it?
Mm-hmm. Are they mumbling?
Those are going to be key in finding good people. And you could find people who don't have any collection experience, but they're a waitress or waiter, and they're looking to get out of food service, but they have the skill set to do this well. So
I will give you one advice on using the mock call. I suggest you use the same collector for the same group of people that you're interviewing. And I suggest you use the same script of the call that they're calling on. It's like that. Everybody's getting assessed by the same information. Don't make up a different script with every person that you're trying this with. Make it the same so you could see the response equally across the board.
And so, Irene, to that point, what we do is we send them the script before the interview. And that's
a test
in itself. Do they come prepared? Have they read the script? So the interviewer... can tell, like, did this person read through this before they showed up to the interview? So that's another little test that doesn't cost anything that'll tell you, is this person serious or not, or they mature, immature, kind of let you gauge on that.
Yeah, we give them something else with instructions about, like, how to get there and things like that to see if they ran through. But the mock call, we wanted that to be a surprise.
Yeah.
Because handing them the phone, the look on their face is the best to see how they react. Because some of them panic right away. And, you can't panic in these situations. And some of them may not like it, but they take it with a grain of salt, and that's okay. I could deal with that. But that's part of the assessment, is a surprise.
Do they not know they're doing a mock call the day they come in?
No clue till I hand them the phone. And you can see Mara just made a comment about that. She agrees. Mara was the person that I worked with that was the collector almost all the time on those mock calls. So she could tell you how well it worked. It was pretty often awesome. She's awesome.
I love the mock calls. That would be something that would be huge, I think, for us to do. Something that comes to mind as far as traits that I see in these great collectors is the confidence, survivors, the gift of gab, the hustlers, the ones that know how to get down and dirty and do the job. Again, the flexible or being flexible with change, that's huge because in our industry, things are always changing. And so we need them to be able to kind of roll with the punches and not get upset when IT things come into play or we're switching over to something that's more beneficial. The survivors, the hustlers, the ones that, like you said, Irene, you said something about people that need to work, the ones that have to have a paycheck. That is huge. You can definitely spot that in those interviews and just by certain questions that you ask. Something that you said, Calder, that I really liked is give them a scenario with a conflict. How do they work through that conflict? How do they address it? Is it something that, there's a conflict with the supervisor? Is it a conflict with another collector? And just see their thought process. Those are also very, very good things and ways to pick up good traits.
Mm-hmm. I want just to add, she said something in regards to their emotion. How do they, Irene, you talked about how do they overcome. I think one of the prerequisites, if you are a Chicago Bears fan and you talk to them and they tell you that they're still a fan the next day, that is a heck of an agent because they don't give up. So in regards to But yeah, no, I totally agree with each and every. I took some notes on different takeaways on what you guys were saying. But one of the things that I look to do, you talked about if they're looking to pass along that journey, they're not trying to stay. I'm okay with that because one of my biggest things that I love when you're with me, I want to get your skill set to be so transferable that if you do go somewhere else, that, man, it's a high level that, man, that it can be connected back to me. And maybe where you go, it's something that's able to help the company that they came from. So I try to tie in where they're trying to go with what they're doing, because a lot of times what they're doing connects to where it is they're trying to go. If you're trying to start a business, you got to know how to communicate. You got to learn how to be able to overcome objections. All these things are connected to what it is we do on a daily basis. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, and I agree. The only thing that I disagree with is when you have somebody who is literally only there for weeks because they need that paycheck while they're waiting for another job to respond.
Yeah, I agree.
So when you're asking questions like, where else did you apply for a job? And you see they get excited about other places they apply. Oh, but I haven't heard from them.
Right.
Those are the ones that I'm saying that are not good to hire unless you can get more information out of them to let them know, but I'm happy with this too, because there's nothing worse than having somebody 2 weeks into hire and they quit because, oh, someone called me and I got a better offer, so I'm leaving. And I just invested time in them for nothing when I could have hired someone else in that position. That's the type of thing I'm looking for when I ask those questions. But I totally agree. If someone sticks around long enough, even if sometimes it just could just be months, but if someone sticks around long enough to make a difference in your business and you're not just paying them to learn and then they leave, but they never got to the point where they're paying for their seat, I'd rather not hire that person. I'd rather put someone else in that position that's going to stay a little longer and actually make us some money.
I'm going to just jump in quick. Sorry, I hate to interrupt. The conversation's been great so far, and I know there's a lot more we want to get to. But I wanted to give Chris Brickman from Peak Revenue Learning a chance to talk a little bit about KnowledgeSource and Peak Revenue Learning as a sponsor of today's webinar. So, Chris, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides KnowledgeSource, the leading knowledge, skills, and compliance training application for companies with collection operations. KnowledgeSource is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training, both new and existing employees, whether those are on-site or remote. As mentioned earlier, a phenomenon that impacts any company training anyone is the forgetting curve. It describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that's onboarding or some other type of training. In addition to this leading to increased mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, it definitely contributes to greater turnover. A problem that many companies, organizations share is that they consider employee development to be an expense rather than an investment. And this view can have a detrimental impact on morale, motivation, and retention. And according to a study by IBM, employees who feel they are not being developed to help reach their career goals are 12 times more likely to leave their company. Most of the folks we speak to recognize the outdated model of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is absolutely inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning promotes much deeper learning. KnowledgeSource clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance that their staff members have not only mastered, but are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills expected of them when interacting with consumers. KnowledgeSource will increase quality, decrease risk, grow revenue, lower costs, and definitely help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031. We're here to help make your job easier and both you and your company more successful. Thank you.
And real quick, we use Chris top notch. He is the main, he's like the point of the spear in our compliance program. We combine that with monthly and yearly contests. You can get a grade point average and completion rate with Chris's program, and whoever grades out the highest throughout the month in this testing, they get bonuses. And at the end of the year, one of our highest rewards, bonuses at the end of the year, is the most compliant collector. And we're using his software to do that. So good stuff, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks for the shout out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that type of education is great for your staff. Like, if you already have somebody that's struggling, that's when you really need education. I mean, sometimes struggling is not their fault. And especially if they're showing up every day, you hate to lose them because they seem like they're a good staff. And let's face it, we all have a lot of people that take off and you know they could be so good, but they're constantly taking off. Well, you need to figure out first what they need. Did they get poor training? I mean, sometimes look at your own training program. We like to test people after their training. They test them in the beginning after day one. We give them a survey after the training is over to ask how things went, what they liked, what they didn't like, what they felt. And look at those surveys if you give them. If you don't, you really should. Short surveys, just let them know, hey, we're paying attention, and you learn how to change things. But if the training wasn't good, if your training program's not good, you're going to see on the test results that they take a lot of areas where they all got it wrong. And if I find there's a topic that everybody didn't understand, I look at that as like it's either the training or the trainer. Because if nobody understood what was going on, something happened poorly in that training. So is it the new hire's fault or is it the training and the trainer's fault? So that's one way to not only assess your trainers, but to see where you need to fix your training program if they're failing in the same areas. Same thing with the other way around. If they're all doing great in one area, okay, well, how did they train that? Do I need to change the way you're training a different topic to how you're training that topic because that one sunk in and this one didn't? So, look for those comments on similar things. What did they not like about the training? Was it too fast, too slow, too much? It was boring, not enough hands-on? Or even, I felt abandoned once class was over. I felt like they just threw me out there and did nothing. These are all things that might have made that collector fail. Chris said it a minute ago where he said if a collector feels like they're not getting what they need in training, they lose interest in the job, they don't care anymore. When someone doesn't care, I don't care how good they are, they're not going to do a good job. They're probably looking for another one while they're just sitting around doing the bare minimum. And you want a collector to be happy. We talked about the role play, the mock phone call. When you're using role play in your seasoned staff is actually helpful too. Not only could you see what they're doing, we talked about collectors not liking change. If I have a very seasoned collector and my client comes in and says, I don't want you guys doing that, now I got to change for that client, and that seasoned collector has it in their head, well, I'm going to keep doing what I always did because it worked. You'll find those things out when you have your leads and your managers and your supervisors actually spending time sitting with all staff, not just your brand new staff, but your collection staff, your seasoned staff, so you could see how they're doing it. Plus, when a new hire sees that you're sitting with everybody, they don't feel singled out. They don't feel like, well, you're just picking on me. You're always sitting with me. They say, nope, we do this. We monitor everybody regularly. So that's going to help you also with your staff to keep them all on task and everybody feel confident in what they're doing.
I'm curious. What would you say your batting average is in identifying great collectors? How often, are your first impressions, whether or not somebody's great or not, accurate these days? Just curious, to give people a sense of A, where, sort of what compared to theirs, but B, maybe get a little bit about sort of, sometimes great collectors are, people you don't expect to, or, as we've talked about already, the people you think are going to be great don't always turn out that way.
Anybody want to answer that? I'll go.
Yeah, I don't know in regards to the average, in regards to the great collectors, but you have a sense, you have an idea of when you have that person on the floor, if you're spending enough time with that individual, because they're going to have that it factor that we all can tell. We talked about it. Do they know how to communicate? Do they have that sense of, hey, I got to get that commission. I got that goal. Are they goal oriented? So those things that you can tell, and sometimes they may be cold and they need to be chiseled away into that diamond that you see them as. And sometimes it just takes the ongoing training, the ongoing coaching. They can't just be left on the island. And you can identify them, you know, one person at a time. If you get a training class of 20, it's just like, you know, being an educator. I can go ahead and tell you, have the class, is not paying attention and not going to make it. But there's always the two or three that are those gems. And you can quickly identify that and turn your focus to getting them to where you need to be and continuing to bring in that next batch to where you will have that elite group or that elite team within your organization.
The thing is, collections isn't for everyone. So they might be really good at the task. I mean, in training, you might see them be, wow, they're learning everything. They caught on. Their test results are great. But then when they go to get on the phone, they're like, everything flies out the window when they sit there and they can't even say hello to the person on the line. So it's just not for everyone. Or they might be doing great and then a couple months down the road say, I hate this. I hate speaking to consumers. I don't want this job. I want something else. So it's not always a matter of are you doing really well with can they do it? Because lots of times, yes, in an interview, we could tell that they can do it, but it doesn't mean they're going to succeed. So I think it's easier to judge when could you tell if somebody's not going to succeed. I say within the first 3 months for sure, you could tell if someone's not going to succeed. But I can't tell you if someone's going to be great or not in the first 3 months. But I could tell you if they're going to be great after 8 months. That's what I found is the line there, because before 3 months, I could see what's going on. You know, I could see that they're just not catching on. They're failing tests. And you want to end that relationship as soon as possible. You don't want to invest any more time with someone who's really just not catching on. But with someone who's getting by doing okay, at 8 months, what usually happens is they stagnate. That's when they're just enough speed and just enough knowledge where they're bringing in money, but money in the background off their desks are falling off. And so they just stagnate. And that's when you really have to figure out, okay, how do I get this person to move faster, to be confident enough, to be okay with their decisions and not second guess themselves. They know the stuff. They're here 8 months, move faster. And that's when you're going to see they're either going to skyrocket and become great collectors, or they're going to stay stagnated and just be an average collector. And you got to be okay with that too, because not everybody is a star. So this is the type of thing you want to see. And I'm going to tell you a quick story. I had a collector who would not reach her goal for 18 months. 18 months she didn't reach the goal we set for her. She had some medical issues. She was out a lot, but there was something about her. I mean, this is a person who literally was catching on great, new things. She'd come up with ideas. She would question stuff in a great way and ask, well, this isn't right. Could we do it this way? I mean, she made things better, but she was absent so much, and she just wasn't bringing in the money. And there was even a time where we had to worry, is it worth keeping her? But I just saw something in her that was great. And after 18 months, she did make her goal. And once she started making it, her health issues were over. For probably about 13 years, she was our top collector. That was pretty awesome. And she became our lead collector, and she became someone that people went to just as much as they came to me. I mean, it was awesome. If I would have let that person go, I would have made a big mistake. And I also had somebody who hated people. Turned out she just hated people. And we didn't really realize how bad this was affecting her work. She was doing fine, but in the beginning, she was kind of sloppy with her test results, just passing by. But again, I saw something in her that just seemed like she can catch on. You know when I found out that she was great? When COVID hit. We had to send people home. She just did great. She just needed to stop being around all the chatter, and she didn't like being around the collectors. But man, what a difference when she was by herself. When I left the company, she was still, I mean, Mary, you could tell me if Trish is still doing wonderful, but she was unbelievable once she was home in her own environment. So yeah, she's a lead now. So it's amazing when you pay attention. You said it before, one person at a time. Individually, you can't put everybody into the same pool. Once they're there, you want to work with them. I mean, you hired them, you saw something, you want to work with them. But it's okay to let go when you see in the beginning this person is going to fail. If you've already looked and you saw, no, our training program's great. No, everybody else got the tests right. She's the only one who was getting it wrong. Well, it was noticed during class. All she would do was talk and she wasn't paying attention. And she's not getting to account. She's always off her seat. Whatever it is that you notice, this is not a good fit for the company, move on. But don't expect to find the best people those first couple of months, because even if they're great, wait that 8 months. See what happens around that level to see if they skyrocket or just stagnate.
You know, one of the worst feelings in the world is to know someone can do the job well and then they don't believe in themselves or they don't like it. That's when you're struggling to find good people and good talent. That's a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when you know they could be wonderful, but it's not going to happen. They don't like it.
Yeah.
Burnout is something that happens with everybody, but it happens much quicker if you don't like what you're doing.
Absolutely.
So someone asked here, you mentioned 18, but I think you said 8 months of not hitting the goal. How long is the average time agencies wait?
Well, this collector was 18 months before she hit her goal. But usually 8 months is when I start seeing them escalate. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, no, and it depends on, you know, where's your budget? Like, you know, what can you afford? Because are you willing to deal with the unemployment after, if you're waiting after 90 days? You know, do you see if you have that trainer, if you have that program where you can see them getting better, it is cheaper to keep that person on if you're seeing them continue to climb that ladder than it is to go back into the bucket and get the hope factor. So it can vary. So I would love to say it's this number you want to follow, but it really depends on, are you seeing that person grow? That is to me, the most important component to it, because everybody isn't great. Everybody isn't going to come in and just hit the ball out of the park, but are we taking the time and do they have those traits? Do they have those things that are saying, man, they're going to be amazing. They just need a little help with this. They get stuck with this on this call. And if we can help with them getting over that objection, they're going to be amazing. And sometimes it takes months for them to get that. I have this great thing with people, especially I coach too. So I'm going to believe in you until you believe in yourself. I'm at least give you that energy because I'm a fight with you so we can get to that hope. And once we get there, man, it's going to be amazing. Sometimes, guess what? We won't get there. But they will never, ever be able to say that I did not give 110% to help them get to where they're trying to go.
And
your attitude is exactly what makes it work, because there's too many managers out there and leads out there that don't have that attitude, Ken. When you could make a person feel like, I got your back, I'm there for you, I'm going to work with you, you are always going to have a more hardworking staff than if you just, like you said before, leave them on the island. Don't monitor them. Don't give them feedback. Allow them to create bad habits that no one corrects. Forget to reward them for the good habits they're creating. You're doing the right thing. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things. If anything comes out of this today, Ken's reaction to how he feels about training his staff and sticking by them probably will do more than anything else we've talked about.
Yeah, I think you need good leaders in order when you're all of your new employees are going to have that conversation with themselves of, do I like this? Do I want to continue to do it? And when those conversations, and a good leader, a good trainer or manager, they'll know when that struggle is happening and they can come along beside them and help them with that. And it's that leadership that Ken's talking about and helping motivate them past that point of, man, this is really hard. Do I want to, it could be really rewarding, but do I want to push forward? When you have that type of leadership that Ken's talking about, that's what's going to make the difference in whether you have a high retention rate or, you know, low retention rate, especially in those people where they have the skill set, but, you know, we just need to get them over that hump. And we see that if I can get people, it's either people stay at my company forever or they quit before 3 months is out.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had, you know, some solution that could help me identify not to hire those 3 month people. I'm sure you all do too. But that good leadership and good training is just critical to keeping those good people and getting to be great and just keeping them in the company.
And making sure it's fun.
Yeah.
Something that I think here that we try really hard to do is, you know, they're in different departments. So they start off in like a training department where they have an unbelievable amount of hands-on every single day training. You know, once they have graduated from that and then they go to, you know, what would be our campus experience floor, You know, we do all check-ins all the time, whether it's call audits, whether it's live listen. The biggest thing I want everyone that works for me to know is you are constantly learning. We are constantly making you better and getting you to the next step. And, you know, when we'll do like group audits where there's several different collectors in there and they give each other feedback. And so, you know, like you were saying, Ken, I mean, it's a constant hands-on thing. And I don't know if there's really that magic number, you know, if they're not doing well after 8 months, 9 months. But again, you can see if they really want it and they're giving it their all, you know, we're willing to continue to work with them and get them where they need to be so that they can be successful.
And most people aren't fully trained between 8 months and a year.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't expect what all we have to learn, all the regulations we have and all the things that they have to do and all the pressure they have to be compliant. You can't expect them to remember everything and then talk to people and not say anything wrong and do
right.
that in a couple of months. I would tell people all the time when we would share calls, because we would listen to their calls and then we would meet at the end of the week and share it with them. I would say, you're going to listen to this call now, but I bet if you listen to this call 2 months from now, you're going to say, why didn't I just say this then? Why didn't I just do that then? I said, I don't expect you to be great now. I expect you to be okay. I said, in 3 months from now, I expect you to be better. And 3 months after that, I expect you to be better. I said, one day you're going to be great, but I don't expect great. I expect you to make mistakes. And it kind of makes people feel a little less intimidated, like, oh my God, I'm on my own. Now I got to do everything right. No, you got to just do it okay. And don't be afraid to put a person on hold. And don't be afraid to ask the person next to you to call somebody over. It's okay. We expect that. And I would even give them scenarios about when other people did. I would show them calls when other people did, and it made them feel a little less intimidated. But if you don't make training fun and meant for adult learners, some are going to get bored. Some are going to get overwhelmed. Some are going to think, well, this is crazy. You're putting all this crap in here, and I could have learned this without all that stuff and did it faster. But someone asked in the chat, how long is your classroom training? When I did training, it was classroom training itself encompassed a lot of stuff, and it was 10 business days for the classroom training. And in that classroom training, we still had them go on the floor and sit with collectors here and there to observe. But after classroom training, I felt was more important. Because it was the after classroom training that we would have mentors that they would sit with before they were allowed to be on their own. Because they know everybody in their class, they know the trainer, but now you're putting them on the floor and they don't hardly know anybody. So we would have them sit with collectors, so they were building relationships with collectors during the classroom training. We would have the leads and supervisors email them and say, hey, how are you doing with training? So they would build some relationships with the leads and supervisors. So when they got on the floor, they knew people. They had stuff. And you know that mock collection call in the interview? That also helped them to now know somebody in the office too. Oh, you're the person who did my call. I remember you. And it was nice to build that little relationship. But you can't just say, okay, 2 weeks are over, they're trained. That I think is dropping the ball pretty big. And even every Friday, we would have the trainer go back because they were familiar with the trainer. And the trainer would go back and meet with them for an hour or so and say, okay, what did you guys do this week? What did you find? What was different than training? Anything helpful? Because they were familiar with that person. They felt comfortable talking with them. And that would wean off too. But our training literally took close to 2 months before we considered that person like really on their own. They still had somebody sit with them. There still were leads on the floor. They could answer questions, but without that constant mentoring. And even then, when they were on the floor by themselves, our software pulled up activity reports that showed us everything they did inside the system from the minute they logged in to the minute they logged out. We look at those for all collectors, a couple of them a month, but for those new hires, we would have somebody look every single day for the first week they were totally on their own, so we could give feedback immediately when something was wrong or something was right. They never felt abandoned. They always felt like somebody was there, and I think that made the biggest difference. Make them know that they're not alone, because even the best person, if they feel like they're just thrown out there on their own and thrown under the bus, not only are they going to fail, but they're going to blame you for it.
I want to add something. There's something that the interim head coach for the Chicago Bears said that I thought was so profound. It was very deep. He said, I'm not looking for perfection. I'm looking for excellence. And I had to go and Google excellence. I'm like, oh, man. And I'm like, man, that was actually really good. I really enjoyed it. And that's really what you want. You want somebody that's giving their all, that's pushing it, that you see them getting better. Because there's no such thing as perfect. There is getting better. So when he said that, I'm like, man, I'm going to actually have to steal that. I'm going to use that one. And that's what you want in a person that's trying to get better. You're looking for that excellence, that they're giving it all that they had.
I have a conversation with our trainees the first day they start every month. And I tell them, do not compare yourself to anybody else in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You're each going to move down the learning curve at a different pace. Some of you have done this before. Some of you have not. And especially don't compare yourself to someone who's been here for a year or two. And you need to be able to give yourself grace, because we'll do that and we'll let you know, what you need to work on. So, you know, the worst thing you can do is doubt yourself. Like, you need to be focused on, don't compare yourself to anyone else. Are you better than you were yesterday? Are you better than you were last week? And through that, you can create that environment where they feel okay, where it's, you know, okay to make mistakes and they're progressing. And one of the big signs that someone is not engaged or isn't going to work out is attendance. Like, if someone stops showing up to work or they're calling out sick, that is the key to, you can't get better if you're not at work. And that's my number one sign when I need to stop working with someone and we're just go ahead and let them go, is if the attendance issues start popping up because they don't like what they do. So.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Got to make training fun. And if they think that it's too boring, you lose them. And you think you've gone over the subject really well, and then at the end of the day, they only listen to the first half hour of what you were saying, and that's it. You can't just preach at people. You have to teach people. And that's a different model, teaching people. Sure. I do like tests. I love Kahoot. If anybody hasn't used Kahoot.com, I just love it. The games are so much fun. It's friendly competition. I use Dingbats. Anybody ever use Dingbats? If you don't know what it is, Google Dingbats. They're so much fun. They're just like the picture things. You have to see what the word is. You have to figure out the phrase from the picture. And I like them because taking a break is one thing, but taking a break sometimes makes your brain slow down a little bit. And when we would stop and do a Dingbat, it kept their brain going in a fun way. So they seemed to be more energized when we would go back to doing what we were doing. So Dingbats, they're awesome. But if anybody's logging in from home, it's something that's very easy to do with them because just they can see it on the screen. So it's not like, okay, everybody get up and get in a circle and do a team activity. I mean, that you can't do if you have somebody that's working from home. But you could do things like that very easy with people that are off-site. And if you have a lot of off-site collectors, you need to use some vendors. There are some vendors out there that are awesome for monitoring off-site collectors, for them being able to give different questions to your supervisors that are monitoring them, because you don't want them to feel like everybody else is a family and they're not part of it, because you'll lose those people then too eventually. So just be careful with how you're making sure people don't feel abandoned.
And I see the question. Somebody asked about the grace period before you start, enforcing disciplinary action. You should have a matrix of, almost a curve of expectations. We all need expectations. We should. Everyone should have a goal in regards to, because if there, it's great to have a carrot, but there also has to be a stick. I think we're getting too far in the world where everybody wants the carrot, but nobody wants the consequences. So to me, you have to have goals. You have to have certain things set for them to reach. And it doesn't matter how old or how long they've been there. At a week, can you log in? At 2 weeks, do you know the mini Miranda? Everything should be a target for them to have those achievable goals. And the more you do it, the more you would have a gauge of when you do get that next class in 60 days from now, you would have a roundabout, okay, it's going to take them about a day and a half to get this down. So, and you can always tweak the goals, but to me, everything should start with expectations. Call it the getting to work on time. That I can tell you is a key for the founder and owner of my company. I want you here on time. Again, and I like to add, each person, you are an independent contractor. If your business isn't open, somebody's walking right past going to the next shop. So if you're not here, you're not making money.
And has anybody used job descriptions in your interviews to actually have the duties of a job description and send it to them before the interview so they know what's expected of them? It's not such a surprise. Another thing we did during interviews that I thought was very helpful and the person really came out was we gave them an interview time with a staff member. So during the interview, we took them into another room and said, okay, you're going to speak to so-and-so and you're able to ask them any question you want and they'll be honest with you. And then after that meeting, at the end of the interview day, we would meet with that person who met with everybody and we'd ask them, what kind of questions did they ask? And it was amazing how some people really didn't ask anything. And some people had only questions about benefits. And some people had questions about, well, what do you do every day? Which was a great question. So tell me what it's like here every day. So how do they treat their staff here? Are you happy? And you got a real indication of what they were asking. But what it also did was when they came back into the interview room, they were different people. They came back more relaxed. They came back less nervous. And we'd find more out about that person after they interviewed for three to five minutes with a peer of a potential peer. We actually got a better interviewee when we got back because that person seemed much more relaxed and confident. It was a great tool to use. You asked before about how could you tell and what percentage. I can't give you a percentage because there are too many professional interviewers out there. There are too many professional people that actually train on how to do an interview. You could Google it. You could see it. They give you tips about how to win an over on an interview. And it works, the things they say, which is why in your interviews, you have to come up with things that are off the cuff. You have to come up with things that surprise them. So I thought they couldn't have prepared for it, and you get the true person in the long run. That's not an easy thing to do. And you're going to miss plenty of times, but at least you get a little better. And never just hire somebody to fill a seat. I mean, if you want to say, okay, I need 10 collectors, man, don't scrounge the bottom of the group there and say, well, this one was okay. We'll just hire them too. If you only got to hire five, you only had five good candidates, hire five. Because now you're wasting your collector's time because they're the ones that are going to be helping to mentor. You're wasting your trainer's time. You're wasting your time. And you're wasting that person's time. Please don't hire just to fill a seat. I think that's one of the worst things you could do.
I cried looking at my payroll cost when I had an HR officer just basically hiring to fill seats. It's a lot of money wasted.
Yes, it is.
On trying to fill seats instead of hiring quality.
Yeah, I'd rather have less people. You said it before, Kim, when you said you hire 20 people, you're hoping to get three really good people out of it. Yeah. That's usually when it happens a lot when you're just filling seats that half the class stinks.
Avoid that.
All right, we've got just a few minutes left. I'm going to forgo my usual end of webinar question asking for homework for everybody because there's a question here in the chat that I'll use as a wrap-up question instead. Someone asked if you could each share the top one or two things you've discovered in the interview or hiring process as keys to future success as a collector. So if you were going to limit it to, you know, your answer to one or two things that people should be looking for during the interview hiring process as an indicator of someone who's going to be a great collector, what are those one or two things that people should be looking for? Candace, we'll start with you.
You started with me last time. I'm going to say confidence. And probably work ethic.
Okay. Confidence and work ethic. All right, Ken.
If it's asking, you know, one of the things that I'm asking, what's their ultimate goal? What's your goal? And I'm trying to find out how are we able to team up so I can help them get to that goal. What are they attempting to do? So it. You know, if I want to be a singer. Okay, how are we going to get you there? How does that connect to what it is that you're doing here? So it doesn't make sense for us to continue this moving forward. You know, so are they confident? Are they great? So those things in regards to, okay, what I'm looking for, one of the questions that I'm asking is, you know, what is your ultimate goal?
All right. Great question. Irene?
Besides what Candace and Ken already said, I would say professionalism and desire, because I don't want somebody who acts like a gangster. I don't want somebody talking to my staff using too many slang words and things that don't sound professional. I want them to be professional. I want them to come to the interview dressed professional. To me, that means they cared about that interview. They didn't just come in a pair of sweatpants. I get the job or not, I don't get the job, who cares? I want somebody who took care before they walked in to look as professional as possible to make them feel like I'm serious about this job. And desire, it's kind of like what Ken was saying. What, trying to figure out, do they really want to work here? What's their desire? Is their desire, like, they're excited about the job? They're thinking about, well, this is going to be great, I can't wait to get started. Their desire to be there. So I want them to be professional, and I want them to have the desire to be there. I don't want it to just be they walk in because you answered come interview to their sending you something on Indeed.
You lost me at track pants, but that's okay. I was never going to be a collector anyways. Calder.
I'm going to relate it back to my filters. You want to have filters in place that will show their desire to want to work there by having multiple levels in place in the initial interview process. Maybe call it hoops to jump through. But also, they're not pointless or meaningless. Like, send them several sets of questions. And if they answer your questions with one sentence that's six words long, that's a bad sign. If they write paragraphs to answer your questions, that's a great sign. And if they do so and they're very responsive to those, getting through those filters or jumping through those hoops, that is speaking to, I want this job. I really want to interview for this. And then in the interview itself, testing, because we're starting to hire remotely now, and it's becoming more and more important for that computer literacy. Got to do a typing test, whether they're in office or work from home. You want something to, we do a mock call. That's another thing you must do, but then you need to find a way. We have a simulator at TBA where they reach a rule set, and then they work through a simulated collection software, and they're listening to a verbal call that that is an employee that's pretending to be the consumer, and they progress through that, and we're looking to see if they follow directions, did they document what they needed to, and the how are they treating the patient, the consumer. And at the end, it's graded out and emailed to the trainer and me. But put filters in place for what you want to hire for, and you'll be set.
I'm just adding one last thing. This is really for Calder.
Come on. Go Dogs.
Love it.
It's going to be tough to beat Texas two times in a row.
All right. Well, listen, Calder, Irene, Ken, Candace, I want to thank each of you so much for being here on behalf of everybody who's watching and listening. And walking away with a ton of great ideas to put into practice in their own office for how to identify great collectors. Thank you all so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it. Chris, I want to thank you and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Everybody, please check them out. PeakRevenueLearning.com is the website. To those of you watching and listening, thank you so much for making us part of your day. We really appreciate you giving us an hour of your time. If you're watching us live, we're back in an hour with another webinar today at 3 o'clock Eastern, Mastering Email Deliverability, how to make sure your emails are staying out of junk and spam folders. If you haven't signed up for that yet, there's a link in the chat, or you can find a link on the events calendar at accountrecovery.net. If you can't make that one, we're back with a webinar at 1 o'clock Eastern tomorrow on optimizing and how to figure out the best call to actions in your digital communication. So, talking about technology for the next couple of webinars. So we'd love to see you back for those. Hopefully you can make it. If not, enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.